big news that has been largely absent from the headlines for obvious reasons. Too much else going on. But this is a big story. I think most of you remember SARS, S-A-R-S, the acute respiratory syndrome that broke out in 2003 in China, quickly spread around the world in just a couple of months, but was fortunately contained. It was a bad one. It was spread so very easily, the usual, a cough, a sneeze, and it just rambled, thanks to airline traffic, around the world. It's a virus, little droplets entering the air. That's all it took. Cough, sneezes, talking even. That's it. No known SARS transmission has been reported since about 2004. The normal symptoms, fever, dry cough, headache, muscle aches, difficulty breathing, and then some people died. There's no treatment for it. It's a virus. All you can do is give supportive care to people and hope they can pull through it. Skin-to-skin contact, remember that. Shaking hands can do it, okay? Kissing, sharing drinks or food. Touching a contaminated surface, like a doorknob, going into a building, a door handle, and forgetting about it, and then later on going and touching your eyes or your mouth or your nose, whatever, putting it on your face. It lives. It's a virus. It's tough. So we have a new issue. There's an outbreak in China that may be linked to the same family. In fact, I think we've proven that. We're going to find out in just a moment. Same family of viruses called coronaviruses that caused SARS. And back with us tonight is one of the world's preeminent virologists, Dr. Henry L. Nyman, Ph.D., who's been with us for, 15 years at least now. Henry, welcome back. Thank you very much for staying up late and being here. This is a potentially another big, big story.
Yeah, it is quite a story, and it really started last month, but it wasn't really all that clear as to exactly what was going on. I mean, there were some clues in retrospect. All the clues were really there, and there was other noise that kind of got in the way, and denials, and and so it really actually the first big clue came out about a week ago or so, and but it was kind of buried. It was in a Chinese language report. And most of the report really kind of described the wet markets and et cetera, et cetera. And then, just giving historic information that kind of indicated something was going on, but really wasn't clear exactly what the virus was. It was a viral disease. The mm-hmm. patients were all didn't improve when treated with antibiotics. They had several of them, I think seven of them, were in critical condition. They had links to a wet market in Wuhan, which is a fairly large city of about 11 million people.
W-U-H-A-N, Wuhan, got it.
Right, and it's in Hubei province, kind of the middle of the country. And the initial cases were kind of tied to a wet market. They originally described it as a market that sold seafoods, but the subsequent reports indicated that it had a lot in common with the wet markets.
When you say wet market, Henry, that's a new term for us here. Wet market. What do you mean?
Okay, a wet market is basically a market where people actually go to buy. It's frequently animals. It can be a variety. It can be poultry, but it's usually mammals. And they're kind of exotic. If you remember SARS, the main species that was talked about were the civet cats. And these are sold in what are called wet markets. So they're wet because they're live animals. They're actually slaughtered on the spot. So you
they're in cages, and you say, I want
your
that
dinner.
One, and yeah,
right.
That's it.
And then they take it in the back room, and they slaughter it and wrap it up and give it to you. So it's wet because, you know, there's blood and urine and feces and hoses to wash things down. And so it's kind of designated as a wet market that you have both. The animals are, as you said, they're in cages. They're kind of densely packed in, so there's one on top of the other. So it's kind of ideal conditions for diseases to spread, like viruses, from one animal to the other. And that is probably what led to a bit of a misconception on the origin of the virus. That has applications to the current outbreak. What happened it started in Guangdong Province, which is adjacent to Hong Kong, it really started in the late fall before it really got out and about. And so it was in Guangdong Province. You know, there were rumors. ProMed ended up gaining its reputation because it started reporting some of these rumors. The official news agencies denied that anything was happening, but they, you know, it was a mystery disease. And then things really got out of control. I think it was in late January, early February. I think it was 2002, might have been 2003. It was that time frame. You're on actually an hour earlier than you used to be, so I thought I had an hour to get all the specifics up from back then. But anyway, the
are you
concept,
doing great? Yeah, it was 2003, so let's say February 2003. I think you're right,
right
on the money there.
So in February of 2003, things got totally out of control because a physician who had been treating patients in Guangdong Province had gotten infected. And he had a daughter who was getting married in Hong Kong. So he basically...
Oh, I remember this story.
Took
in a hotel.
Train, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
To the Metropole Hotel, and
yeah.
And he had a room on the ninth floor, and he ended up getting very sick. He ended up vomiting outside of his room
in the hall. Yes,
in the hall, and I don't remember the exact number, but about half of the patients, residents, you know, the tourists who were in this Metropole Hotel, got infected with the virus. And then between the time they got infected and got very sick, they got on a plane and went home. And so, you know, one flew to Vietnam, one flew to Toronto, one flew to Singapore, and one actually was a in a resident of Hong Kong. So you really had four different vectors kind of going out with this virus.
That's all it took. I want to, Henry, let me make this point again. Most of you listening are well-versed in this whole idea of disease transmission and mobility. But it just takes three or four people who are infected. They're subclinical in terms of symptoms. They're asymptomatic. They get on planes, but they're shedding viruses, and when you're in that tube called an airplane, you're breathing recycled air, viruses, bacteria, yeah. God only knows what, and that's how it was spread, literally around the world.
Well,
it just was that fast.
Well frankly, these initial cases weren't so much spread in the airplane. They were spread by the airplane, so they ended up infecting families and members and healthcare workers at these locations. It was Hanoi, it was Singapore, it was Toronto, and it was Hong Kong. So those cities ended up treating these patients. And so the patients weren't that bad on the plane. They were, right. you know, they were right. by and large asymptomatic. They weren't spreading the virus yet. When they got home, their, you know, their viral load increased and, you know, they infected family members before they went to the hospital, and then they infected healthcare workers when they got to the hospital, and then they infected family members when they came to their funeral. You know, so those were kind of the places where the viral load had gotten so high that they were at or near death or had just died, and there was plenty of virus and plenty of fluids. And it then spread out from those contact points, and then they kept getting, you know, additional waves of people. That, you know, the initial patient did one wave, and then a relative came into the hospital, and then there was another wave, and people got infected by just being in the bed next to a person that came in. You know, they
That's
were
right.
kind of in the emergency room, and they got it. And so it was, you know, it really spread very quickly, and most of it really came from the international spread anyway, came from this one physician. It only took one person. And back then, there were people that were called super spreaders. It seemed to be this especially efficient at spreading it, that they would be infected and they would go in the hospital, and, you know, everybody on the floor got sick.
They'd leave a trail
of sick and dying people. And there was, I can't remember the name of it, but there was a residency, a big apartment complex. Same thing happened, that it was being spread through the ventilation system in the apartment building.
All it takes.
You know, there were dozens of people.
This was a classic
there in Hong Kong.
Classic spreading of a virus in the modern world.
Right,
just amazing.
Right. And it made it clear that, you know, the next case of SARS was just an airline flight away, and that, you know, it could literally go around the world. So, you know, it ended up with, I think, in something just under 800 people ended up
774 dying. Dead, 37
yeah,
countries.
And it really, you know, took off, and it was, it wasn't just that one, you know, from the Metropole Hotel, but because there were a lot of other cases, especially in China, in Hong Kong. Actually, it went from Hong Kong by plane to Taiwan, and there were a lot of cases. Taiwan had a lot of cases also. And, raised a lot of alarm that it ended up being contained, largely because of, they got the intermediate, and the intermediate, species in this case were different exotic animals. The most noteworthy were the civet cats, but there were other. There was a raccoon dog. I don't remember. There were like four or five different species that ended up passing the virus along. But the take home from the species was that the virus in these different species was identical to the virus that was in the human. And since the virus was exactly the same as far as sequence is concerned, in fact, one of the Metropole Hotel had this 29 nucleotide deletion, and so you could look at the sequence, and that was not only was it closely related, but it had this same deletion, and so everybody that was, you know, linked to the Metropole Hotel had that, which was the vast majority of the cases outside of mainland China, And the sequences in the civet cats, especially later on, had that same deletion. And what that said was that none of those species was the actual reservoir, because the civet cat, it was kind of a new phenomenon there, and then these other species got infected at the live market, so they had the same virus. And the civet cat sequence was, you know, virtually identical to the sequence in humans, but that really wasn't the animal reservoir. So there was a lot of research going into identify exactly where this virus came from. And antivirus was identified in bats that that looked, you know, somewhat like the virus that was in the humans and the civet cats. There was still a difference, so you didn't get quite back to the exact bat source, but you did get back to the species. So it really looked like the bats were, you know, a significant reservoir for coronaviruses. And even though the viruses had a little bit of evolutionary distance between the sequence in the bats and the sequence in the humans and the cats, the bats are probably where the virus would hang out. And but, you know, people generally didn't come in contact with the bats, so they were getting infected by the animals in the live market, and so they got the virus under control by just a major culling operation where they basically killed out all of the animals in the wet markets and cleaned up all the wet markets, and they kind of stopped the virus at its source, or, you know, at its human source, not at its natural source. And then actually the virus came back the following year, and it was a little bit different, but it was it wasn't that different. And started having a few cases, and they immediately did another major culling operation, and that kind of put an end to it. So there really haven't been any SARS cases since, but there was a lot of research that was done. I mean, there's a lot of coronavirus sequences, and there was research into additional coronaviruses that when they were looking at the bats, they saw that, you know, there were several different classes, and coronaviruses weren't new to humans. There were a couple. I think it's 229E and OC43. These were coronaviruses that were known human pathogens that caused respiratory disease in humans. But they were more like flu-like symptoms that didn't really progress to bilateral pneumonia where the patients can't breathe and they have to go on ECMO machines and they die anyway kind of situations. These were significantly milder cases. And then new ones were identified, but the new ones were identified, by looking at these different reservoirs for corona-like sequences. So they would take the sequence of the SARS virus and they would find a conserved region in the virus and use that conserved region as a probe to get other coronaviruses. And then they discovered new viruses, new coronaviruses that had never been identified in humans. And then they did searches for, humans with different respiratory diseases that didn't have the known ones. And they found that some of these other viruses did cause respiratory diseases in humans. But, it was a search that went from taking a known virus to find a related virus that had never been reported in humans.
They found more than they expected. Yeah.
Well, but what they ended up finding, and this is critical to how some people were commenting on the current virus, is they found viruses, but the viruses were mild. And the reason they were mild was just the sequence of events. They found the virus that had never been reported in a human. And the reason they had never been reported in a human wasn't because they weren't in humans. It's because they didn't really cause that, you know, serious diseases. So,
right.
You know, you went in and
you had the flu or some virus.
Yeah. And you know, yeah. it's not the flu. We're not sure what it is, but it doesn't seem to be too serious. And, you know, come back if it gets worse, and it didn't. It got, you know, people basically didn't have a serious problem with the viruses.
No,
it was never identified. So this way, when you found it, and then you found it in these humans, people say, well, you know, you found these coronaviruses and people were concerned that you found a brand new virus and it's never been reported in humans. And now you can find that it really wasn't humans, but it's not a big deal because it doesn't cause a serious disease.
Let me wrap this up for we got to take a break. We'll come back and talk about the new SARS-like virus in Wuhan, China, that could break loose anytime. SARS, again, really began to make its mark in early 2003, as Henry said. 20% of the SARS cases were healthcare workers. And I know over 40 died, mostly all healthcare workers in Toronto. They just took it really right on the nose, and a lot of them died. It is also said that while many people who were infected with SARS recovered completely, a fair number in Toronto and in other outbreak settings have suffered long-term, this was written 5-6 years ago, physical consequences of the disease or of the treatments used. This is a quote from Paula Gardner, a clinical psychologist at St. John's Rehab, blah, 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 blah. She studied the long-term effects of the disease, SARS, and said that PTSD is not uncommon among SARS survivors. So you get over it, you survive it, and you're not necessarily out of the woods. It's like Ebola. They found their first rebound case of Ebola now, an alleged reinfection of someone who survived it. So these viruses are pretty snaky. SARS had a case fatality rate of 9.6, call it 10%, died, who got it. And remember, there's no treatment. All right, we'll be right back with Henry and Iman in just a couple. This is a big story. We're giving you the very latest, and we're going to get you up to speed fully as we continue. All right, welcome back. Talking with Henry about this new SARS-type coronavirus, which has broken out in China, most notably in the large city of Wuhan. Is it under control? Oh, my. I have no idea. I couldn't even begin to tell you. But I do know that communicability and contagion are things that we seem to be not particularly prepared for. There's more to come on this, much more, I think. Henry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I would think the answer to your question about control is that it almost certainly is not under control. There are a number of confirmed, well, I don't know about confirmed, but one, since I just got the sequence, I know 15 of the cases have been confirmed to have this virus based upon lab confirmation. My guess is many of the other ones are also infected. They either haven't been tested yet or they don't have the test down well enough to have it reliable to, you know, get a high percentage of the.
So the number of 50 that they're giving us could be several times under reporting easily.
Well, the numbers, I think they've got 57 that are likely cases and about an equal number of suspect cases. So they've already got over 100 people that that have symptoms that are in Wuhan and they think are reasonably good chance that they're going to have the virus. Now there are a bunch of people elsewhere that basically probably don't have the virus because they started getting concerned and putting out alerts, and in Hong Kong in particular, you know, because of the history, they've looked at, I think, 30 people who had been in Wuhan and had symptoms or had pneumonia. And don't think any of them are actually going to be true positive because, you know, it's a challenge because flu season, you know, there's a lot of other respiratory diseases that come up about the same time of the year. So people are going to have flu-like symptoms and, you know, flu tests are better than they've been, but you can get false negatives from flu tests. So they can, you know, have the flu and test negative, and they say, oh, well, you're in Wuhan and you got flu-like symptoms and you don't have the flu, so you must have this virus. And then they look a little harder, and they, in some cases, they didn't find one case with an OC43, which is a coronavirus, but you know, like I say, it's not a new virus, and it doesn't really cause
so far,
a lot of serious disease.
Any fatalities that we know about, Henry?
No. Now, that's the one thing that's different, is that they have not been any reported fatalities. There were 11 in a serious condition, seven, then the number went up to 11, and I think it might be back to seven. So none of those have died, but you have to remember that with SARS, the patients weren't dying immediately. You know, they were, you know, going on ECMO machines, and some of them were on ECMO machines for, you know,
weeks.
30 days, 60 days, right, for extended period of time so they could keep them alive. But a lot of them, and it was mostly kind of middle age. The younger cases did reasonably well, and there weren't that many older cases, and it was people that were 40, 50, maybe 60s. Those were most of the fatalities. So there hasn't been much information on what the age distribution of the current cases are. If they're younger, there's probably a pretty good chance they will survive. And this virus, like, you know, just about any virus, there's going to be a viral load issue that some people that have symptoms and got infected, you know, with a low viral load are probably going to recover pretty well, even though, you know, people to get infected with a higher viral load, possibly if they have a similar age distribution as SARS, those are the people that are going to get in trouble. And this really started kind of in the middle of December. So there really hasn't been a whole lot of time for there to be a lot of fatalities. So I'm not sure that the critical cases have, I'm not sure how many of the ones, like the original seven, have recovered. I have a strong suspicion that none of them have been recovered. They're all still in the hospital.
Nobody's talking. So, yeah, for obvious reasons.
Well, they are. They're saying there's no fatalities. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, they don't say so far, and they don't really, acknowledge the fact that this is a very, very young outbreak. And that's what happened. You know, if you recall, I don't know if you do, but I definitely recall that one of the chief criticisms I had of SARS was their case fatality rate, because their case fatality rate was being suppressed and kept down. They didn't really lie. They just went ahead and did the calculation incorrectly. They did the case fatality rate based upon the number of cases confirmed is the denominator, and the number that died is the numerator. And the problem is the case fatality rate should be the ratio of the number that died versus the number that were discharged, that recovered. So they did the calculation on the assumption that 100% of the people that were alive would stay alive. And so the numbers, you start out and early on,
I remember you were very mad about that. You didn't like that at all.
Because the case fatality rate wasn't at all accurate. And they were saying, the case fatality rate was 10-20%, when in reality nobody had been discharged yet. And people were getting sicker faster than they could die, and so the rate stayed low because more and more people were coming in, and they weren't getting discharged; they were just being confirmed positives. And then there was a big, and I don't know what the deal is, but it was like the number of cases just shot up very dramatically at the end, and all of those patients ended up surviving. And so it was always a little bit suspect how that was happening and who these extra patients were. So the case fatality rate did get down below 10%, but it was being decreased initially because of how they were counting, and then they tacked on all these patients that suddenly the number of cases went up real dramatically and none of those died. And then if you remember in Taiwan, they were afraid to get the case fatality rate too high. So they would basically just not test. So the people that were really sick ended up dying and they were cremated. And they were never tested. And they were put into a SARS-like condition as opposed to a SARS-confirmed. And the reason they weren't SARS-confirmed is because they weren't tested. So they went and in fact, I think the case fatality rate of the SARS-like cases was higher than the case fatality rate of the SARS-confirmed because the ones that they knew had SARS and were going to die, they didn't bother to test because they didn't want to acknowledge that they had more SARS tests. So the government's kind of manipulated the data pretty dramatically to keep the case fatality rate down, particularly in Taiwan. And I'm not sure who all these patients were that came in at the end. All of which survived, and they brought it down. So they did end up officially, it got below 10%. But anyway, moving forward to what's going on in the current outbreak. There were a couple of clues that it really was a coronavirus. Some of the early reports were that, they had evidence that it was a novel coronavirus. And then the same thing happened with H7N9, which I don't know if you remember that, but people got arrested for spreading false rumors by saying that it was a novel coronavirus. And so the same thing happened with H7N9. People were, in fact, arrested then when they said it was an avian influenza virus that was causing the deaths, and they got arrested for spreading false rumors. And in both cases, the people that got arrested, the rumors that were being spread were accurate, and the government was spreading the false rumors by saying, these patients weren't infected with bird flu for H7N9, and the patients weren't infected with SARS, and that's how they kind of weaseled around on this with denials. They went and they said, they've got these symptoms, these atypical pneumonia kind of symptoms, but they tested them for flu and they were negative. They tested them for adenovirus and they were negative. They tested them for SARS and they were negative. They tested them for MERS and they were negative. Now, SARS and MERS are both coronaviruses. And
MERS, MERS, he's saying, MERS, MERS, Middle
right,
Eastern
Middle
Re-
East
Respiratory Res- Syndrome, MERS.
Right, right. And in both cases, those are well-defined viruses that they have very specific tests for now. And so they've got the tests fine-tuned, so they'll pick up SARS or they'll pick up MERS, but they won't pick up the related viruses because they've fine-tuned the virus. So the fact that they were negative for SARS and they were negative for MERS indicated they didn't have those two viruses, but it didn't indicate they didn't have a coronavirus, even though both of them are coronaviruses. So their tests are designed so they don't cross-react. They can distinguish between SARS and MERS, even though they're both coronaviruses. And they're really two different classes of the coronaviruses, although MERS is closer to SARS than they are to these other coronaviruses that produce mild disease. But in any event, so they said they were negative for SARS, and they said they were negative for MERS, and they arrested people that said they had a novel coronavirus. So, on the one hand, that's a clue that that's probably what they did have. On the other hand, it was kind of, is China really going to do the same thing again? they did this with H7N9, and they did this with SARS. And, in the end, and they ended up admitting that what it was because, it was a disease. There were a bunch of scientists that were working on it. And the scientists discovered what it was. They were going to sequence it and publish the sequence, and then everybody in the world is going to know. And that's exactly what happened with H7N9. With H7N9, they ended up, after arresting these people and denying, then finally, I think it was on April 1st, because people kind of wonder if it was April Fool's joke or not. All of a sudden, they put out three complete sequences.
I remember that, too.
It was definitely H7N9. And not only was H7N9, it had at least one of the key changes that allows the virus to switch from avian to mammalian. So it's a very dangerous H7N9. And H7s were always dangerous. I don't gotta go too much into the flu stuff. But anyway, right, they ended up, admitting it eventually. And the same thing happened with SARS. I mean, everybody was trying to figure out what the mystery disease was. And they ended up having a cell line that would, pick up almost any virus. You could tell that the virus was there because the virus in this particular cell line would cause the cells to fuse. They called them syncytia. They were called
syncytia. I remember that.
Could look under the microscope and you would see these big, big circles in the lawn of all these smaller cells because the circle is where a bunch of the cells had fused together. So they knew the SARS cases had a virus that was able to cause, form syncytia, but they didn't know what the virus was, but then, people started coming up with all these different probes to conserve regions, and then they said, "Oh, it's a corona-like virus." And then, eventually they got an electron microscope. The reason it's called a coronavirus is it looks like a crown because the spikes are on the outside. You look at a microscope, and you can just see the circle with these knobs sticking out, and it looks like it's kind of a corona.
Yeah. We're coming up on 7 minutes, and I want to make sure we get as much in as we can. Interestingly enough, appeared about 10 years after SARS did, about 2012, something like that. And they call it the camel virus, And then they found a variant of it in Egyptian tomb bats. But that's an interesting thing. They were similar. And here we are, 2003, 2012, and now 2020, almost another 10-year, well, give or take, 8-9 years. Another potential. And you kind of wonder why this repetitive thing. Is somebody experimenting? Are these beta tests to see what the virus will do in the general public? I know that's conspiracy and you don't like that, but I think that. I don't rule anything out.
I know. I've seen those speculations, but, the thing they do have in common is they reservoir our bats and that they can go into other species in case of MERS, they go into camels. So a lot of the people that got infected by MERS got infected by, close association with camels and that where their infection came from, more because they raised them, But in any event, there's a similarity in they are frequently found in bats. And that's why I say there's a lot of coronavirus sequences out there. And that's why the result that was announced today was so significant. Because, again, it's how they kind of initially got around admitting that it was a novel coronavirus by saying it wasn't MERS and it wasn't SARS. So it wasn't those two specific viruses, but those two negative tests did not, they were negative for MERS. That didn't mean they didn't have a coronavirus, and they were negative for SARS. It didn't mean they didn't have a coronavirus. It meant that they didn't have either of those two, well-studied viruses and probes that are very specific. So the announcement tonight, actually, that they actually had a full sequence, it was preceded by another clue. And the other clue came in this Chinese language paper that said, well, they got a virus from one of the patients and they sequenced it. And they only had 4% coverage. And it wasn't that close to the SARS coronavirus. But some people misinterpreted that report, and they thought that they were saying that it was had 4% homology with the SARS virus, which is an exceedingly low percent homology. 4% is like no homology, and that's not what the report said. It didn't say it was 4%. Homology. It said there was 4% coverage. And the coronaviruses are pretty big. They're about 2.5 times as big as a flu virus as far as their genome is concerned. And so they've got 30,000 base pairs for their sequence. So 4% of 30,000 is 1,200. 1,200 base pairs is a lot. You can have 20 base pairs, stick it in the gene bank, and blast it. So you just essentially doing a search for a match. And if you get a match with 20 nucleotides, you pretty much know what it is. I mean, it'll go right in there and it'll yank that right out of the database if you got 20 nucleotides. These guys had 1,200 nucleotides, and this report came out January 1st. So last year, they knew they had a novel coronavirus. And, they didn't know exactly how closely it was related to which one, but they knew it was a coronavirus. And as it turns out, they actually did know what it was related to. And that was kind of
Did some of your colleagues over there tell you any of this stuff? You have colleagues all around the world.
It's out there. You just have to dig for it. But I didn't talk to anybody. I mean, some of the colleagues are at Hong Kong, and I didn't really reach out to them to find out what they had. This stuff was was out, if you want to dig it out. Now, the one I'm talking about in January, January 1, was not picked up at all by English language students. It was an announcement in China, so you had to translate it. But that was the first clue. When they said 4% coverage, and it was not very homologous to SARS, that, again, doesn't rule out that it was in the same class as SARS, and that's what came out today. That what came out this morning, or I think it was around noon, was that the persons familiar with the sequence, quote unquote, said that it resembled the SARS coronavirus precursor in bats.
Right, right.
And that's bad news, because that the SARS coronavirus in humans resembled the SARS coronavirus in bats. And it was a pretty big evolutionary jump between what was found in the bats that they knew of and what they had in the human. So you could have something that was kind of moving along in the same direction and paralleling what happened, you know, in 2003, where if you looked in bats, you kind of got close, but there was a pretty good-sized gap. And this one, you kind of got close, but there was a pretty good-sized gap. And this could be, you know, very, very similar to what happened with the SARS. So it's been too early to know if there's any fatalities. And the cases are going up. And the U.S. CDC just issued a health advisory today telling doctors if they have a case of pneumonia and they can't figure out what it's from, they should find out whether that person's been to Wuhan. So,
got it. Okay.
Wuhan, I should say.
Wuhan.
So anyway, it is a developing story, and I expect it to get much bigger, and I expect the sequence will probably come out in the next few days.
Okay. So all right.
That's where we are.
We'll follow it. Yeah, thanks for jumping in tonight, Henry. This is a breaking story, and I wanted to do it. We'll have you back on next week. It's your regular appearance, so by next Thursday, we'll know more about this, see how it goes. Thank you.
Yeah, we should know quite a bit. Okay, well, it's good talking, and talk to you again next week.
Okay, Henry, thanks. Get some sleep. Thank you. Night. Okay, Dr. Henry Nyman. That's our program tonight. Tomorrow night, D.B. Kidd, Gerald Celente, and more. Hope to talk to you then. Take care, be well, and we'll be back in 21 hours.